Lesson number 20, Proverbs chapter 17. Very interesting. This continues the chapter 16 through 22. The second clause in almost every proverb is a completion or a comparison of the first clause, different from the other ones we did in chapter 10 through chapter 15. Here we pick up in verse 1 of chapter 17. Better is a dry morsel and quietness with it than a house full of feasting with strife. Now, the problem is we've got some issues with the actual translation. The translation in Hebrew actually says this: better is dry meal with peace and quiet than a house full of sacrifices where there is strife. Can you imagine what joy and pleasure you would have by taking and opening up a 10-pound bag of flour and taking your spoon and scooping out a spoonful of flour and eating it dry by itself? But what Solomon is saying here is better is a spoonful or a handful of dry meal with quiet and peace all around it than going to and gathering the luscious, wonderful meat that has been sacrificed and brought into the table, and all around that table there is nothing but strife. Which is better? And Solomon says it's better to have a spoonful of flour. We all know what this is like. We all know that even the worst thing you can eat, if you're eating it in the company of dear friends and loved ones that love each other, it doesn't matter what it tastes like, it's still good because of who you're with. But you can have the best meal in the world, and if you're sitting with somebody who's causing nothing but contention in your life, that meal is no good. And in fact, sometimes you're sick to your stomach and you don't even want to eat that meal, no matter how good that meal is. Because of the attitudes, it just changes. The tongue is the instigator of most strife and discontent and discord, fighting, feuding. It's the tongue. And it is better to eat a meal of a spoonful of cornmeal by itself. No butter, no milk, nothing. Just the plain meal. Then this the meal ground up. Than it is with peace around it, than it is to be sitting there trying to eat the best hamburger you've ever had or steak you've ever had in your life with people who you don't want to be with. Solomon is correct. Verse 2, a servant who acts wisely will rule over a son who acts shamefully and will share in the inheritance with among brothers. Just this past week, a family called me that's not a member of this church. And what has happened is they are very upset. They actually called me wanting to get an attorney's name who would handle a case for them. And here's the case. Dad had a ranch. Dad had a gentleman rancher who cared for the ranch. What does that mean? It means that Dad has his house out on the ranch. Dad owns all the land. Dad has a pickup. Dad has a Lincoln Town Car. Dad spends most of his time playing dominoes down with his buddies at the corner store. But he has a rancher who brings in all the equipment, takes care of all the cattle, and when they go to sell the calves and whatever, the gentleman cattleman gets 40% of the sale and Dad gets 60% of the sale. Dad never touches the cows he owns. All the cows are his, but someone else takes care of everything. You got it? And lo and behold, Dad died. And Dad left the ranch to the gentleman rancher. Now, he gave other things to the sons and the daughters, but he didn't want the ranch messed with, and he didn't want the sons and daughters, which I could tell by not only by me talking to one of them, but by their own testimony, they hadn't spoken to Dad in over 5 years. So they're upset. This proverb is true. A servant, an employee of an employer, can sometimes become so close and so honored and so endeared by the owner or the boss that the boss leaves an inheritance to him. Oh yeah, he's in the patch with the heirs, and the true heirs don't like what has happened. I have seen this way too many times in my career in 41 years, where I think to the family, I would say, hey, you know, is everything working out with the probate and everything? No, we got nothing. That shyster who used to work for Dad got it all. I'm going, well, how'd that happen? Well, I don't know. Yeah, now that I'm older, I know. Yeah. It was interesting this week, whenever that phone call came in, I said, when did Dad write that will? Back in 1988. I said, Dad wrote his will. Your dad wrote his will in 1988, and he just probated it. How long has this gentleman rancher been handling his estate? Oh, since 71 or 72? And I go, Dad made his mind up a long time ago. A long time ago. So it is. The proverb is correct. A good, a wise, an honorable servant can often be put into the inheritance with the sons and the daughters. Verse 3, I love this passage. The refining pot is for silver and furnace is for gold, but the Lord tests the hearts. I want you to understand something. There's a great difference in Solomon's day between the furnace and the refining pot. Now follow me, just closely. Silver melts at 1763 degrees. Gold melts at 1947 degrees. It takes quite a bit more heat generated to melt gold than it does silver. Back in Solomon's day, they could build a furnace and they could take different types of clay. They could make little pots. Even the most inferior clay would be fired at about 809 degrees and it would turn to glass. At 1809 degrees, to turn that to glass, they could take silver and put it in that inferior clay and build a small fire and get the fire around it up to where it would do nothing to the pot, but it would melt the silver. And they could pour the silver, after they took the dross off of it, they could pour the silver over onto a little mold. And after that silver solidified, they could take it on and put it on another little mold they had and take another piece, and they could take a hammer and they could strike it and turn those silver little round pieces into coins. They're never perfectly round because when you're doing it by hand, you can't hit it perfectly on. And so you'll see they're all a little out of shape. That's because they are struck with a hammer. But do you know how hard it is to get the temperature from 1763 up to 1947? It is quite a feat to get the temperature that hot. So for gold, they would take a finer, better clay, and they would have to make a pottery that could withstand 1947 degrees and still not come apart or melt. So they would take this clay and they would build a cup and they'd put the gold in it, but now they've got to put it into a furnace. Because around this furnace, they have to take bellows and they have to start pumping oxygen into it to make it hotter and hotter and hotter until the gold will melt. See, for silver, you can do it out around a campfire. But for gold, you got to put it into a furnace to get it hot enough. None of that really matters about what the whole proverb matters. And here's the reason why. Whether you're gold or whether you're silver, it does not matter. The Lord is testing your heart. And the Lord will bring upon you things that will refine and melt you. It is the Lord's doing. And He's the one that will take your hearts. And He will bring sorrow upon your hearts so you will know what true joy is. You cannot know true joy without going through sorrows. If you have never been in the valley, you never will know what it means to be on the mountaintops. And if you're constantly on the mountaintops, you will not really understand until you've hit the valleys, and then you will think you're in another world. But guess what? On the other side of the valley is another hill that goes up to a mountaintop, because you cannot have a valley without mountains around it or hills around it to climb out of it. It wouldn't be called a valley then. It'd be called a plain. And by the way, some of y'all get plain on a plain and you never go up and you never go down and you're stuck. Start climbing. Start climbing. And let the Lord test your heart. Verse 4, an evildoer listens to wicked lips. A liar pays attention to a destructive tongue. Now, what's the difference between an evildoer and a liar? Well, an evildoer is a person who performs acts which are harmful or non-productive for another person. A liar is a person who uses his words to cheat, to perjure, to deceive, to fabricate, to mislead, to malign someone else. Wicked lips and lying lips go hand in hand. You're never going to see wicked lips that are not lying lips, and you're never going to see lying lips that are not wicked lips. They go together. Evildoers will use their lying lips to bolster their own position. And evildoers will rob people of the peace that should be theirs, because they're just doing evil. Just doing evil. Just happened to find a pistol and it happened to go off in his hand and happened to kill a young lady and happened to rob the peace of an entire family. I just found it and it just happened to go off. Nothing of this. Oh my stars. The gun went off. I am so sorry. No, they have to catch the guy. Lying lips, wicked lips. Liars love to see the ruin of people. In fact, they bring destruction. And the word destruction actually means here engulfing ruin. It just engulfs you. It just takes over your life. Verse 5. He who mocks, now you remember the word mocks means to make sport of or to laugh at. He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. You laugh at someone who's poor, you're making your maker, your God, upset with you. He who rejects, who rejoices at calamity will not go unpunished. You do something, you like calamity on somebody's life, and you're just having a great time with it. Now, I am now old enough, and you've heard me say that many times, that I can look back at life. In fact, last year, we were headed to my 40th school reunion, and I took on the task of finding where everybody was. Now, I am the only one in my class that knows where everybody is. A bunch of them have permanent residences. A bunch of them. And I'm sad for some of them, but for some of them, I understand why they are now in the ground. Some of them have permanent residences, at least for the rest of this life. About 21 of them, in fact, have permanent residences in the Texas judicial system, formerly called headquarters in Huntsville, Texas. And you know what's in Huntsville? And one has residence for the rest of his life on what is called death row, which means the clock is ticking for him. It's ticking for all of us, but permanent residence. And then we have two in my graduating class who could not come to the reunion because they're wearing these really special bracelets that they can't leave their house at certain hours to come back. I've got a great heritage in my graduating class. But what's interesting is what I know now, as I look back, I should have known then because of the evilness in these people's lives, where they were headed, and that their love and joy of calamity, of which some of our teachers and some of our parents just said, oh, they're just growing up. That's just the way. But they never changed. And they did not go unpunished. I will tell you this, and you can lay your promise on it. God's promise is there. Evil will not be tolerated, and it will be punished. Now, on this side of heaven, we wonder, when, oh Lord, are you going to hurry up and bring the punishment? But as we get older, we start looking back, and we're going, yeah, God brought the punishment. Yeah, God brought the punishment. Yeah, God brought the punishment. And he does. Start looking back at your graduating classes and see the ones who have not ended up so well in their life. And look how it compared to how they lived in high school and in college. The proverb is true. Verse 5. Verse 6. I used this in a funeral on Saturday, on Friday. Grandchildren are the crown, and that means the dignity or the joy of old men. And the glory of sons is their father. No matter how old a grandchild becomes, he should be able to look at his father and his grandfathers and know and have a joy about them and a glory because of the righteousness and how they lived. And the grandfathers should be able to look at their grandkids and have a pride, a righteous pride about them. I will tell you this. If you want to see how well a man does and how well he taught his children, look at his grandchildren, not his children. And that will tell the tale. How are the grandchildren doing? Has the grandpa left a legacy? Has the grandpa left a legacy that the grandchildren want to follow? It's an interesting thought, isn't it? Verse 7, excellent speech is not fitting for a fool, much less are lying lips to a prince. Remember, a fool in Solomon's words in Proverbs, it means the wicked person. A wicked person is a fool. Excellent speech and lying lips are polar opposites. One is the North Pole and the other is the South Pole. If excellent speech goes to the South Pole, lying lips will depart and go to the North Pole. That's how far apart they are. They'd never come together. It is the prince who should have excellent lips and not lying lips. It is the wicked person who is going to have lying lips and cannot have excellent lips, because a wicked person, a fool, cannot speak those things that are excellent and wonderful. Verse 8, a bribe is a charm. You know what a charm is? We see people, charms that hang around our neck, in the sight of its owner. Wherever he turns, he prospers. I had problems with this because I thought, this doesn't make sense. So I had to go search it out. The word prospers is the incorrect translation. Wherever it turns, it should be he glistens. In other words, he takes an ornament that is given to him as a bribe and he wears it in order that he might vote a certain way or he might do something that is illegal. He takes a bribe and he takes that ornament and he puts it and wears it on a chain around his neck. And wherever he turns, that bribe is glistening to where people can see it. And what is that person who wants the bribe? What does he want to do next? He wants to get another bribe and then another bribe. And wherever he turns, it glistens. It shows that the things that he is thinking about because he's taken a bribe is sinful. And sinful people love to flaunt their sins before other people. See what I got? And eventually they'll say, do you know how I got this? And you'll know how they got it. And the next thing you know, you'll hear that they have taken another bribe for another thing. Never take a bribe for anything, folks. Never allow someone to come in and say to you, I'll give you this if you'll give me that. Because I'll tell you this. If it's not a straight up business deal, but it's a bribe, you're in trouble if you take it. You're in trouble. Next thing, verse 9. He who covers a transgression, that's a sin, seeks love. But he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends. How true this is. Your children who have entered into sins want to come back and know that you have an undying love for them in spite of their sins. Did you know that? People who sin want to still know that they are loved by people. They want people to love them even though they are continuing to sin. Repeatedly over and over sin. And they say things like, Mama, don't you love me? Honey, I love you. But I don't love what you're doing. Oh, Mama, Mama, if you really love me, you'd be okay with what I'm doing. No, honey, I cannot be okay with your doing what you're doing because what you're doing is a sin. Mama, you don't really love me. Daddy, do you love me? Daddy, if you loved me, you'd think it's okay what I'm doing. You're okay what I'm doing. Child, this is not who you are. These are things you're doing. There's a difference between being who you are and what you're doing. You say, well, what do you mean by who you are? Well, I are the son of Lavina and Sterling Hastings. I cannot change that about me. I was born a male. I cannot change that about me. That's who I are, who I am, I should say. Who I are is better because you get the point. I am an artist. No, that's what I do. I want to do this in my mind. That's what I do. There are things that I cannot change about me. Who am I as the creator to doubt what the creator made? Who am I as the creation to doubt what the creator made me? Because every one of us were made by the creator to be what we are. The clay doesn't tell the potter what to make. The clay doesn't say to the potter, I don't like that I'm a chamber pot. I want to be a pot for holy water over in the temple. But the potter says, I am making you as a chamber pot to take care of these details in the chamber, not as a holy pot. We cannot change who we are by doing things different. And yet, those people who are sinning by throwing in the face of God the Creator the attitude that they don't like how they were made is a sin. And they're seeking people to love them. And they keep repeating their sins. And they've gone to Mama and they've gone to Daddy. And now after they've gone to Mama and they've gone to Daddy, they go on about their way back to college, back to Indiana. And left back here at the house is Mama and Daddy, who did not answer the questions right and did not respond to the child correctly, who wanted love the way they wanted love instead of the way the parents want to love them. And now the Mama and the Daddy are going to argue and cry and mourn and have sorrow for the rest of their life, and that child hasn't thought another thing about it. They've gone on their way. And you were all that age one time too, and there were things that you did that you did not get from your parents the way you wanted from your parents to respond to you, and you went on your way and really didn't think another thing about it, and your parents grieved it till the day they died. That's just part of being parents. We worry about our chickens, and the chickens just do what they want to do. Cluck, 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 here, cluck, there, cluck. That's the way they are. Solomon's correct. He who covers sin seeks love. Cover it over. It's okay. This is what the world says. It's okay. My stars, we've got the law to tell us it's okay. It doesn't matter how okay it is. It doesn't change that you love them, but you may not want to love what they're doing because it's not who they are, it's what they're doing. Verse 10. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows to a fool. This is incredibly true. Incredibly true. I know some people who are wise beyond belief. And you can just hint that you're trying to make a suggestion to them, and they take it seriously, and they mourn over it, and they study it out, and they come back and they make adjustments if they're in their life if something's true. But for a foolish, wicked person, you can beat them over the head with 500 blows with a 10-pound hammer, and they'll go, I don't see what you see so bad about it. I think it's just fine. I'm not going to make any changes in my life because you don't know what. You can beat them over the head 1,000 times or 100 times, and it will not matter. And what you're saying to them is trying to help them. That's the struggle I deal with all the time. What you're trying to do is to to offer them something that will do the best for them and put them in a better position. They go, nah, I like the way I'm doing it. I'm not going to change anything. Tell them 100 times. But the wise person, you only have to mention it once, and they're all over it. They're trying to determine if there's anything good in it. And do they need to make any adjustments in their life? Verse 10, a rebuke goes deeper. Oh, no, verse 11. A rebellious man seeks only evil, so a cruel messenger will be sent against him. It's kind of interesting. The word rebellious means defying or resisting some form of established authority. So that means we're dealing in this proverb with some form of established authority. The magistrates of the countries determine what constitutes proper conduct, what is good socially and proper in conduct. In that 1878 a court ruling of Reynolds versus the United States, the court decided on what was proper in social conduct and what constitutes proper conduct in the court case about polygamy among the Mormons. And they decided that polygamy was not proper, did not constitute proper conduct in the United States. And so the Mormons lost in their attempt to have multiple wives in polygamy. And finally they changed their stance on that, and polygamy was brought, quote, somehow brought to kind of an end in the United States, although secretly it carried on. And those people could be arrested because the court system in America said 4 wives or 5 wives or 10 wives, more than one, was illegal. That's what that court decision was all about. Well, what happens is when you break the law, the powers that be, the magistrates, the judges, are going to eventually send a policeman or a constable or someone, a detective or whoever, to find you and restrain you and take you before the judge, who is going to probably say to you, you're not doing good because you have broken the law. Therefore, we're going to take care of you for, say 30 years with a possible time of getting out after 18 if you're on good behavior. Solomon's correct. Solomon's right. You break the laws, you go to jail. Someone comes and takes you away. Verse 12, let a man meet a bear robbed of her cubs rather than a fool in his folly. Now, you go to our national parks and they say, please do not feed the bears. That's a reason for that. Please do not try to pet the baby bears. Here's the deal. Those baby bears may look cute and they may look cuddly and they may even let you pick them up. But remember this, if there's baby bears, somewhere there is a mama bear. And history has proved, well, when a mama bear cannot find one or more of her cubs, she begins to destroy everything in her path while she is angry. Now, Solomon says it like this. It would be better for you to find a mama bear who's lost her cubs than to deal with a fool and his folly. Now, the mama bear may take away your physical life, but the fool and his folly will destroy your spiritual life, your mental life, your social life, and everything that really matters. The mama bear can hurt this body. It's just a piece of clay that we happen to live in. And we may have scars over it, but I got news for you. A fool can destroy everything that happens within. Everything that happens within.